Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our 56th episode with Dr. Smith Live. I have a really fantastic presentation for you this evening. It may seem like a sleeper, but it's really powerful. It's going to be on parasites and also hypoxia. And basically, it's linking to chronic fatigue and degenerative diseases. Everything in the universe is basically connected. And that's the key in the whole equation is that, but this is the fourth part of my presentations and a little housekeeping. Next week, I have a really fantastic presentation on vegetarianism versus eating meat. And there's some incredible factual science that you really should have to wrap your head around it, then make your own decisions which way you want to go. But as far as tonight, parasites, whether you see them or not, parasites are very much everywhere. They're in the air, they're in the soil, in the food, even inside of you, hiding out on your skin, in your hair, and in your gut. There's good parasites, and of course, there's bad parasites. We all know that. And basically, the good ones will eat up the flakes of dead skin, absorb excess toxic oils, and keep your intestines clean. Literally, we have a trillion pathogens in our body, bacteria, viruses, mold, fungi, at any given time, a trillion. So it's just a matter of your terrain. Your terrain gets toxic, these opportunistic parasites and pathogens will take hold. So over 50% of the human population has parasites. Some parasites are beneficial. Like I said, good parasites do exist, and they're all aren't always very obvious. So the nicest parasites are the fungi, which we can eat, like mushrooms or food and drinks made from the yeast, also like bread and soy sauce. Some fungi are also used in medicine, antibiotics. So again, there's good and bad. So parasites are believed to be the most common life form on Earth, making up more than 80% of living things. Parasites secrete toxic waste, which is a poison to your body. And common ways of getting parasites are eating raw fruits and vegetables and sashimi. So if you fall into those categories, you better do a parasite cleanse on a regular basis because you're going to get them. So there's six parasite facts, very interesting, that I came across. There are known to be over 430 species of parasites that can and do live on or in the human body. 430 species. Wow, that's a whole lot. Head lice can make you feel unwell with the symptom a bit like having the flu. So that's the origin of the saying, I'm feeling lousy. It's all based on the lice. I thought that was very interesting. One of the deadliest parasites is the mosquito, which can give you malaria. And malaria has killed more people since humans first evolved than any other disease. Very interesting tidbit here, little trivia. Some parasites are plants. The world's largest flowering plant called the Rafflesia, it's a parasitic living inside tropical trees. Tapeworms can grow inside and reach as much as 30 feet. And you can get parasites from other little parasites. So don't think that you can't. I had a patient who was in the Peace Corps back in the 60s. And for 40 years, she was chronically ill. And it turned out she had parasites. And when she did her cleanse and all, she sent me the photographs of the worms that came out of her. And once she cleaned the house, her allergies, digestion problems, aches and pains, literally all disappeared. So it's real deal, people. Discovered 200 million years ago, the oldest flea fossil shows little to no difference than the modern fleas of today. So they haven't evolved too much. So that's the six kind of little parasitic pearls of wisdom that I came across that I thought you'd be interested in. So how do you get parasites? Well, protozoa are especially easy to pick up via the oral route, as it takes, you can take in one cyst into the mouth while you're swimming. and that can start off the infection. So traveling to countries with underdeveloped sanitation and poor quality drinking water is one way to pick up a parasite, but it isn't the only way. Outside of travel, some of the most common ways you can get parasites are swimming. So some parasites thrive in water, and chlorine won't kill them. They've adapted to it. That's why they have to upgrade the potency of the chlorination. It's chloramine that they're using, I believe, in the water systems now, as opposed to chlorine, because a lot of adaptations have adapted to the toxic chlorine. All it takes is one accidental swallow of water from a public pool, hot tub, or river. Food, unwashed fresh produce in mesh bags or undercooked seafood are perfect hiding spots for parasites. Caring for others, assisting others in personal hygiene like bathing or diaper changes puts you at risk for parasitic exposure. That makes daycare centers and nursing homes some of the easiest places to pick up parasites. Outdoor activities, you can infect yourself with a parasite if you don't wash your hands after outdoor activities and gardening or horseback riding. Drinking contaminated water. Contamination of public drinking water in the U.S. isn't common, but it does happen. I've treated patients with Giardia and Cryptosporidium, some basic waterborne contamination from public water supplies. According to the CDC, if you get your water from a well, you're at much higher risk. This is especially true after flooding, which can leach contaminated runoff into private wells. Giardia is one of the most common parasites from contaminated water. Some of the symptoms of giardiasis is diarrhea, watery or greasy stools, fatigue, feeling overly tired for long periods of time, unsettled stomach or nausea, stomach cramps, bloating or gas, and dehydration, which may cause you to lose weight. So a parasite source you would never think about, okay? 15% of plant potting soil contains hookworm and roundworm eggs, or both. According to the study by a veterinary record that was published February 18th in 2006. Also, blood donors are potential sources for parasites, because I can guarantee you they're not evaluating the bloods of the donors very, very judiciously. You know, they ask them some basic questions, but they're not doing their due diligence. So God forbid you have to get a transfusion from a donor, you potentially can get a parasite. Pets can carry parasites and pass them on to people. It's called zoonosis. And viruses, bacteria, fungi, and parasites can be passed on from your pets. Examples of zoonosis include anthrax, which is an infection caused by the Bacillus anthracis bacteria, cat scratch fever, Ebola, which is a deadly virus, rabies, caused by a virus that affects your brain, Lyme disease, the plague, Salmonella, and E. coli infections, to name a few. If you want to get a whole complete list, go to healthline.com/health/zoonosis, list of diseases. It'll be up on the website on ghsdoc.live. You'll be able to see this recording tomorrow, and the notes will be up there so you can get the website to get the complete list. Now, symptoms of parasite. Of course, different parasites cause many different symptoms, and some can mimic other infectious diseases. Whether the culprit is a roundworm or protozoa, the most recognizable symptoms of parasites are digestive issues, usually constipation or diarrhea, gas or bloating, allergies, weight loss, irritable bowel syndrome, sleep difficulties, itchy ears, nose, or anus, teeth grinding, abdominal pain, brain fog, anxiety and depression, headaches, fatigue, skin issues, rashes, so forth, and iron deficiency anemia. So intestinal parasites are also known to cause some of the inflammatory and autoimmune diseases. In fact, many autoimmune diseases can have an infectious trigger as the root cause, including parasites, bacteria, viruses, or fungi. three effective ways of getting rid of parasites. And we've mentioned some of these in our past presentations, but I'll just review them again for you. Food grade diatomaceous earth, 1 teaspoon with 8 ounces of water upon rising for 1 week, then increasing it to 1 tablespoon with 12 ounces of spring water upon arising for 90 days. Interestingly enough, the food grade diatomaceous earth does three major factors. One, it scrapes the walls of mucus plaque and all kinds of debris that have been built up over the years. Secondly, it absorbs toxins from your intestines. And third, it literally lyses all kinds of parasites and kills them. So diatomaceous earth is a very inexpensive way of getting rid of your pets. And of course, ivermectin, 1 cc per 100 pounds, and you can repeat it in 2 weeks. Now, interestingly, a good friend of mine sent me a picture of a notice at the tractor supply company, and of course, they're covering their backsides, and they're saying it should only be used in animals, and if used in humans, could be harmful and even cause death. So it's another scare tactic that they're using to dissuade people from using farm-grade ivermectin. But trust me, I've used it personally. I've used it with my patients. It's called agromectin. There's no problem. They're not going to give a toxic chemical to an animal. It's just, like I said, another scare tactic. And it's a whole lot cheaper to buy from a farm supply company than getting it from a prescription source. Mimosa pudica, very powerful herb, uses and benefits. It's anti-venom activity, wound healing, anti-anxiety and anti-depression, anti-inflammatory, anti-parasitic, aids in joint pain and soothes ulcers, antimicrobial, antifungal, and antiviral properties. We'll give you the information, but it's very, very effective for all kinds of parasites. Not everyone sees critters in their stool when taking Mimosa pudica seed. You may see the seeds themselves. The sticky gut scrubbers grab onto parasites, biofilm, and toxins and pulls them out of your system into the stool. Some may see the larger worms or roundworms in their stool, but in reality, about 70% are microscopic that you're not going to see. Many parasites release different enzymes that actually dissolve their bodies as they die off. Even though you may not see these things visibly in your stool, does not mean that they're not there, okay? And it's recommended continuing taking Mimosa pudica for at least 3 months because of the life cycle of the parasites. You may also increase your dose as tolerance up to 5 capsules twice daily. It's important to take Mimosa pudica seed on an empty stomach about a half hour to an hour before eating. The concept behind this is that the parasites will eat the Mimosa pudica instead of your meal, helping to remove them. Mimosa pudica seed challenge you can do. For the first time, you can do the challenge. You take 2 capsules every hour upon waking with plenty of water while fasting. The goal is to do this for 8 hours. Some may choose to do it a shorter period of time if they cannot tolerate this length. Others who have done this challenge previously can take more of the mimosa seed on an hourly basis. With any parasitic cleanse, it's optimal to try to do this around the full moon when the parasites are most active. The challenge can be a useful tool if you have hit a plateau or you have persistent gut issues that are not responding to traditional treatment. Our next major topic, which is really of interest because it's the common denominator of all your degenerative diseases, and that's hypoxia and hypoxemia. What is hypoxemia? Hypoxemia occurs when the levels of oxygen in your blood are lower than normal, which, you know, on the internet, they give you a range of 95 to 100%. From my clinical experience, oxygen levels should not be below 97. If blood oxygen levels are too low, your body may not work properly. In fact, I recently had a patient who passed away because of hypoxia, and I have the photographs of his fingernails, and they were blue. So your body and your heart and your organs can't function with low oxygen levels, and it can kill you. Blood carries oxygen to the cells throughout your body to keep them healthy. Hypoxemia can cause mild problems such as headaches, shortness of breath. In severe cases, it can interfere with your heart and your brain function. Hypoxemia that causes low oxygen levels in your body's tissues is called hypoxia. Sometimes people use the two terms interchangeably, but that's not the same thing. So hypoxia symptoms. The signs and symptoms of hypoxia can vary between different people and by how long the symptoms have been present. Some of them include bluish tinge to your lips and extremities, and they call it cyanosis, confusion, lethargy, and or lack of judgment, elevated blood pressure, which is hypertension, elevated red blood cell count, called polycythemia, in people with chronic hypoxia, elevated respiratory rate, they call it tachypnea, and euphoria and a sense of well-being, fainting or syncope or dizziness, headaches, lack of coordination, rapid heart rate, they call it tachycardia, shortness of breath, dyspnea, shortness, tingling, warm sensations, tunnel vision, or other visual changes. Again, the lack of oxygen can basically affect the brain and all your organs. So the effects, the organs most affected by hypoxia are the brain, the heart, and the liver. If hypoxia is severe, irreversible damage can begin within 4 minutes of the onset. Coma, seizures, and death may occur in severe cases. Chronic milder hypoxia can also cause damage to the major organs of your body. When hypoxia is acute, symptoms often include motor incoordination and impaired judgment. Due to these symptoms, a person with hypoxia sometimes is erroneously thought to be intoxicated with alcohol. Chronic hypoxia tends to have different symptoms such as fatigue, apathy, and a delayed reaction time or reduced work capacity. The causes. There are different causes of hypoxia depending on the mechanism which lower the amounts of tissue oxygen occur in the various organs of your body. These causes can span the spectrum from problems at the level of the heart to non-medical reasons, such as traveling to a region where altitude is higher than at home. So for example, I mean, if you go to Colorado and you do skiing there, you may suffer from hypoxic symptoms. Altitude sickness. To prevent hypoxia, the Federal Aviation Administration recommends supplemental oxygen for civilian pilots for daytime flights over 10,000 feet and over 5,000 feet at night. Lung conditions. Inadequate air exchange in the lungs may be due to illnesses such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, lung cancer, emphysema, pneumonia, rheumatoid lung disease, and pulmonary hypertension. Hypo, which is underventilation, hypoventilation simply means not breathing enough. Hypoventilation is also present in obstructive pulmonary disease, such as also asthma and cystic fibrosis and bronchiectasis, and restrictive pulmonary fibrosis, including rheumatologic causes or scarring in your lungs. Causes of anemic hypoxia. In the setting of anemia, low hemoglobin levels result in reduced ability of the blood to carry oxygen that is breathed in, and hence a diminished supply of oxygen available to the tissues. Causes include anemia of any cause or any source. This can include iron deficiency anemia, pernicious anemia, chemotherapy-induced anemia, also nutritional deficiencies of folic acid or vitamin C are a big factor. Hemorrhage, of course. Hemorrhage can be obvious, such as from injuries sustained in an accident or hidden due to internal bleeding. Methemoglobinemia. Methemoglobinemia, also known as affinity hypoxia, is an abnormal hemoglobin that doesn't bind to oxygen very well. And when you smoke, the carbon dioxide the carbon monoxide attaches to the red blood cells, preventing oxygen from attacking. So those of you who smoke, you're decreasing your blood oxygen levels. and it doesn't let go. Unfortunately, the lifespan of a red blood cell is 120 days. When you get the carbon monoxide attaching to your red blood cell, it doesn't let go until the cells die. So you're going to get some polycythemia vera, which are increased red blood cells to compensate for that. So causes of circulatory or stagnant hypoxia. This form of hypoxia is caused by inadequate blood flow, which results in less oxygen available to the tissues. The causes include edema, which is swelling of your tissues, like from a heart failure. It can limit the ability of oxygen present in the blood to adequately react with the tissues. Ischemic hypoxia, it's obstruction to the flow of blood carrying oxygen, like from a blood clot in a coronary artery or, you know, heart attack. It can prevent the tissues from receiving oxygen. Also, very interestingly, eating the adulterated omega-6 oils that we get in our supermarket shelves will turn your cell membranes into plastic and can result in hypoxia. So it's rampant in our society today because of the toxic oils. They treat it purposely to give it a longer shelf life. But in reality, I think this is one of the major causes for a lot of cancer and degenerative diseases in society. So causes of histiotoxic hypoxia. With histiotoxic hypoxia, an adequate amount of oxygen is being inhaled through your lungs and delivered to the tissues. But the tissues are unable to use the oxygen that are present. Cyanide poisoning is a possible cause. Use of adulterated oils, as I just mentioned. In my opinion, I believe this is the biggest reason for hypoxia. The cell membranes literally turn into plastic and cannot absorb your oxygen. And remember what Otto Warburg's Nobel Prize research showed, and got one Nobel Prize in 1931. When your oxygen levels diminish by 35%, you're setting the stage for triggering off cancer. So with a diagnosis, there's many different tests your healthcare provider can order to get a better grasp of why you're experiencing symptoms of low oxygen or low levels of oxygen in your tissues. Even if the cause of your hypoxia is known, laboratory and radiographical studies can be used to get an ultimate cause for your symptoms. So some of the tests that may be done if you have hypoxia include pulse oximeter. It's a little device you slide your index finger into, and when the green light goes on, it starts reading your pulse and your oxygen levels. Very simple, easy to do at home. Arterial blood gases to evaluate your respiratory metabolic status. This be done more in either in the hospital setting. Blood tests may include a complete blood count that they call the CBC to look for anemia, which is low red blood cell count, or signs of infection. Electrocardiogram, EKG, to look for any signs of heart damage or irregular heartbeats. X-ray or computed tomography, their CT scan of your chest, to look for any lung diseases or pneumothorax, holes in your lung, or infection. Bronchoscopy, to look for any foreign body or any other causes of obstruction in your airway, such as a tumor. CT or MRI of your head to look again for any brain abnormalities that could suppress breathing, such as tumors, bleeds, or stroke. And echocardiogram in order to observe the motion of the heart and look for damage or abnormalities in your heart and heart valves, congestive heart failure being one such incidence. Treatment, okay? The treatment of hypoxia will depend upon the underlying cause. If it's oxygen therapy, if you have shortness of breath or having other symptoms suggestive of moderate or severe hypoxia. You can also use ozone therapy too, and you can do it through the ears, vaginal or rectal administration. Drink ozonated water, that'll increase your oxygen levels. If your symptoms are severe, mechanical ventilation with a ventilator may be needed. Unfortunately, people brought into the hospital with a COVID situation and they have pneumonia and they put you on a ventilator, they're going to kill you. Hyperbaric oxygen treatment is sometimes used for severe issues of hypoxia. The increased levels of oxygen provided under pressure can sometimes improve tissue perfusion in a way that otherwise would not be possible. Dietary correction can include organic cold-pressed omega-6, omega-3 oils. This is designed to repair your cell membrane and omega-6 oils literally act as a magnet, pulling your oxygen into your cells and quickly raises it. You want to also establish an alkaline pH, 7.35 to 7.45. Most people in our society are around 7.65, which is not good, people. It lowers your pain threshold, and of course your oxygen level, and your glucose gets broken down to lactic acid, which is fermentation, and it sets you up for cancer. So some of the foods to look for should be abundant in vitamin A, B complex minerals like iron, copper compound, and nitric oxide. Turmeric is a great herb, and that's high in nitric oxide. Lemons will help alkalize you. Limes will help alkalize you. Spinach, which is a rich source of nitrate, the body converts the nitrates into nitric oxide. Dark purple grapes, which are high in resveratrol, great antioxidant. Avocados, rich array of nutrients, including vitamins A, B3, B6, B12, choline, folate, and healthy fats. These nutrients support enhanced oxygen levels, reduce cholesterol, regulate blood sugar levels, and lipid profile. And nuts, walnuts, hazelnuts, filberts, hemp seeds, pecans, and raw pistachio will also help establish a more alkaline environment and give your body the minerals that it needs, because the longer you your system is in an acid condition, the faster you're going to degenerate. Some of the vitamins that I recommend, Saruta Plus from Standard Process, it's made from green buckwheat. It has the J factor in the vitamin C complex. Ascorbic acid is not vitamin C, people. Ascorbic acid is not vitamin C. It's the antioxidant fraction of vitamin C. Must be food-based. Amla C, Indian gooseberry, probably the most concentrated form of vitamin C on the planet from a food base. And again, the J factor is the one that'll increase your oxygen levels. B12, the dosage, recommend dosage, 2.4 milligrams per day for men and women, 2.6 milligrams per day for pregnant women, and 2.8 milligrams per day for women who are breastfeeding. Folate, okay, the RDA is 400 for men and women, 600 for pregnant women, and 500 for breastfeeding women. So that ends my little presentation, and I'm sure you'll have some interesting questions about parasites and also hypoxia. Like I said, our society is too acidic, and unfortunately, their oxygen levels are not at the most beneficial levels. So, Jared, I think if you want to send me some questions, there we go. How do you get rid of prions? Basically, they're from protein sources, and a good digestive enzymes, also zymesins, which is a systemic enzyme, not a digestive enzyme. Systemic enzyme will break foreign protein down and metabolize it. Also, digestive enzymes will help break it down in the stomach area. All your antioxidants are good too, resveratrol, coenzyme Q10, glutathione, curcumin, that'll help the liver process any of the prions or toxins that it pulls out of the blood more effectively. So, great question. Thank you. With regards to the use of frequency versus the experience of the real thing, food, environment, how do you see the balance? Well, I think the use of frequencies will be kind of like a turbocharge, a supercharge to help enhance your body's functioning. I wouldn't want to become a breatharian for long periods of time. The key is your foods give you fiber and other essential nutrients that we don't even know that exist. So I would, you know, you could use frequencies, you know, like 30% at a time to support, you know, your good diet. And how do you see the, okay, is there use of frequencies or substitute for the inability to find the real thing? Yeah, so basically, I just got an email from one of my patients and also who is a student. He's a dentist in Australia. And he says it's really horrible down there. That's a totalitarian state. And it's very difficult to get hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. In fact, if a physician makes a prescription for hydroxychloroquine, they'll throw him in jail for 6 months. That's how bad it is. So under those circumstances, frequencies are a whole lot better than not doing anything at all. And he's also very interested in my frequency program. So I think that's going to explode down there in New Zealand and Australia, because these poor people, they're even, I did a consult with a patient a couple of days ago, actually Thursday, last Thursday, from Australia. And they're even going to be closing down supermarkets so you won't have access to food. I mean, these people have an agenda to thin out the population. That's what it's all about. So again, I would do a 30% balance of the frequencies versus eating foods, but in conditions or situations where you don't have accessibility to foods or medications, you're going to get good results with the frequencies. So great question. Can a CyberScan identify parasites in liver cysts? Interestingly, I know it'll delineate parasites. I'll be honest with you, I've never used it to try to delineate what the parasites in liver cysts would be, but it basically picks up parasites. So that's, and the bottom line is, if you're using the appropriate remedy, like food grade diatomaceous earth or Mimosa pudica, the cysts are going to be removed. So not a big deal. And again, the zymescence will help digest any foreign protein. So if I only take the earth, but not the ivermectin, can the parasites still be removed? The diatomaceous earth, you have to do it for 90 days with a tablespoon. Yes, that should knock it out. I mean, you'll be like a newborn baby. Absolutely. How often should we do a parasite cleanse if we have no symptoms? Well, how often do you change your oil in your car? Every 5,000 miles? All kidding aside, Sandy, I would do it twice a year. Before the wintertime, when you start eating heavier foods, and then the springtime, you know, March, April, when your body gets off of the heavy foods. So twice a year is a good rule of thumb to do a cleanse. Okay. Can you look at a cone beam scan and diagnose cavitations? Yes, because cone beam, x-rays, CAT scans, they literally all capture the frequencies of pathogens. So even though you may not see a shadow in the bone matrix, the frequency will be embedded in the diagnostic record. And I do that all the time. I even have patients send in their pathology slides from their cancer biopsies. And I can diagnose the splinters that cause the cancer from the pathology slide. X-rays are the same thing. They capture the frequency of the pathogens. And when I studied under Dr. Yoshiaki Amura in Manhattan, this guy was brilliant. And that's where I learned how to use this technology. It's mind-boggling. The average healthcare practitioner, they don't even know that this stuff exists. So great question. Do you use pathology slides to diagnose? Absolutely, 100%. In fact, I had a patient about a year and a half ago from Poughkeepsie, New York. Excuse me. He had prostate cancer. Conventional treatment didn't work. I never saw the patient. He had his pathology slides sent to me from the hospital. I diagnosed mercury and glyphosate in the cancer tissue, put him on a nutritional program. 9 months later, he called up. He said, my cancer's gone. So I'm telling you, people, it's not as difficult as the establishment makes it out to be, because they don't understand the mechanism of cancer. Something triggered it off. And once you diagnose it and you remove it, the cells go back to factory default. They go back to their normal function. I'm interested to have a career in natural medicine. How would you advise someone who wants to make a career transition into this field? Well, we have this fantastic stewardship program coming up the 24th of January. I sent out an email to, I know all our lists of, I think, listeners that Jared has it. If you want to get it again, I can have Jared send it out to our list of patients and people that listen to our program. 12 top professors, I'm one of them, and you're going to get a broad overview of many aspects of healing. And from there, you could, you know, see what your interests are. You may want to go into acupuncture. Stanley Nye teaches a fantastic program, which I've studied on the Nye Matrix system. It's very, very powerful. You may want to get into strictly nutrition. You may want to get into cranial manipulation, but you can work your way up and get a license to practice natural medicine, which gives you a broad choice of avenues to see where your interests lie. You always want to do things that get you excited. You know, you want to be excited when you walk in the morning to treat patients. You want to be excited at the end of the day because you did a lot of good with people. And so from my perspective, if you take the 12-week program, okay, you'll get a tremendous exposure to information that you will not get in conventional educational systems, because they don't even know this stuff exists. So that would be my best advice to anyone. Get a broad exposure to the many different healing arts. And then from there, use that as a stepping stone to focus your energies on where you want to either specialize or expand your knowledge. And because there's, I'm telling you, the medical system after this whole COVID nonsense, you know, implodes, there's going to be a tremendous need for natural healers, because the people are starting to see that these people are, their medical model is broken. It's not getting at the root cause of the problem. And I think the people are going to be seeking out people with expertise. So that's my 2 cents worth of recommendation. Any comments about fasting to rid of parasites? Can it be done with water? No. Nope. You're wasting your time just doing water and fasting. It ain't going to happen. Sorry. If someone has an infection in the liver or kidneys, could it be a parasite? And how does the Western medicine deal or not deal with it? Well, they give you drugs. But the key is the mechanisms that I recommended, the ivermectin, the food grade diatomaceous earth, the mimosa. From my clinical experience, they're the most powerful ways of getting rid of parasites. Frequencies. We can use also frequencies as a good cleanup operation. But when you use that diatomaceous earth, it scrubs your walls of plaque and junk that had been built up for many, many years. And from my perspective, you know, I would do all three, to be honest with you, because the cleaner your intestines, the healthier your whole body is going to be, because that represents 60 to 80% of your immune system. So, do you think that the gold crowns ought to be replaced with zirconia crowns? Well, if you're having a problem, if you have galvanic currents in the mouth, then, you know, you basically may want to consider removing gold crowns. The other aspect of gold crowns that dentists do not factor into the restorative equation is the fact that gold is a very, very dense metal. And you're putting that metal on a tooth or teeth for bridge work or whatever, it's going to add weight to your head. You know, most people, and especially dentists, don't even think about this. If you have a zirconia crown in one hand and a gold crown in the other, you'll feel the difference in weight. And that affects your head posture. It may be subtle, but it's a factor. But the zirconia is the closest thing to what natural teeth would feel like. So, do you have suggestions of a brand of diatomaceous earth? Amazon has many selections. If you do a pendulum, or you can do muscle testing or dowsing rods, you could literally test the name of the diatomaceous earth with a pendulum, or I can use cranial rhythm on myself, or I'm using a lot more, interestingly, the divining rods, and you'll get an answer on the energy pattern from the name, if it's biocompatible or good quality. Don't sell yourself short. You can do a lot with this type of diagnostics. With the cone beam cavitations, do you recommend surgery to remove the infection, or rather surgery just to treat the infection with protocols? Okay, my advice, it's always better to go into a cleaner environment in jawbone area, as opposed to trying to solve the problem with surgery alone, because invariably 4.5-5 months later, the infections come back. There's no way in a world that you can remove every last virus, bacteria, fungi, whatever pathogen that may be in there. My advice is I would use a combination of things, right frequencies, for example, because they can pass through bone. I would use, you can inject ozone into the area numerous times. Also, you can inject homeopathic remedies, the sanum remedies, into the area to clean up any infections. And of course, getting the body more alkaline with the foods, getting good antioxidants, good anti-inflammatories, and good precursors for healing the bone, like Biost from Standard Process and the Biodent, for example, and getting your thyroid working, because osteoporosis, or metabolism of every cell of your body, depends on the thyroid. If your thyroid is underactive, you're not going to get good healing of the bone. So all these little variables, unfortunately, most practitioners are not aware of. And if you combine them, get your thyroid working properly, feed the body good raw materials, get it alkaline, inject homeopathics into the area, inject ozone into the area. Then when your immune system is built up and you've reduced the infection and you got the terrain healthy, when you do surgery, your success rate is going to be in a high 90% bracket. I would not just rush in and have a cavitational surgery without addressing these other areas. I have a loved one that's got a J&J vaccine. After learning about it, she's scared now. Well, she should be. I know it's not a parasite, but there's anything you can do to detox it. Yes. N-acetylcysteine with glutathione, very, very important. Curcumin, very, very important. Ozone will help burn up toxins in the body. So ivermectin is also good. And you can get homeopathics, okay, of the vaccine. So like cures like. So you can neutralize the frequency of the J&J vaccine with the homeopathic nosodes. So that's the way I would approach it. You want to get the terrain cleaned up by detoxing the body. Have a wonderful course online, Advanced Detox. It's very in-depth, very good information, all the different nutrients. But as a general overview, homeopathic nosodes will neutralize the frequency of the vaccine. The N-acetylcysteine will help with the spike protein. The glutathione will help with the spike protein. Zinc, which is very important to keep down any viral activity in the body. Resveratrol, very powerful antioxidant. Vitamin C, food-based. So that's the way I would do it. But and then you can do ozone, I don't recommend IV. You can do it that way, but if you do too many IV treatments, your veins will become brittle. So if you do a modified with a stethoscope in your ear or vaginally or rectally, you're going to build up the ozone layer in your blood and your tissues, and that'll break down toxins from the vaccine. What foods drink alkaline your body? I just gave a list of foods in my notes. They'll be up on the ghsdoc.live. Your dark green leafy vegetables, okay? Collard greens, kale, celery, cilantro. What else? Bok choy. Anything dark green. Also, you want to reduce your acidic foods, especially coffee, soft drinks. You know, they're very loaded with acid. It's usually 2.6 pH of sodas and soft drinks. But dark green leafy vegetables are the best way to go. Interestingly, there was a book about oxidative issues in the body, and just can't remember the name of the book. It had to do with metabolic typing, the metabolic typing diet. Very, very important book, because if you have a certain imbalance in your body, like oxidative, you know, your oxidative system is too revved up and you're parasympathetic. If you eat dark green leafy vegetables, it'll actually make you more acidic. So it's a certain little pearl that I share with you. So the key is you got to balance out your oxidative and your parasympathetic and sympathetic mechanism in order for the dark green leafy vegetables to work really well. So it's called the metabolic typing diet. So that's what I recommend. You read that and you'll get a good handle on it. What about graphene? Graphene is lead. They're sharp little spears that are traversing your blood vessels and causing bleeding. Glutathione is very good for getting rid of the graphene. The curcumin is also very good for getting rid of it. And, you know, the name of the game is you got to, you know, it could take 9 months to a year maybe to clean out the system from these poisons. But glutathione is one of the best supportive, along with superoxide dismutase for the liver and curcumin and the natural B vitamins. It helps the liver to process the toxins that it pulls out of the blood. But the biggie is glutathione. Is very good, and N-acetylcysteine. In fact, we have a glutathione product called what the heck is it called? Max GXL. It has N-acetylcysteine in it with the glutathione, and I personally take that myself, and that helps counteract the graphene really well. Also, the C60 is another great product to help counteract the graphene and the other components of the vaccines. So there's a lot of great, great nutrients they can use to counteract this nonsense. Thanks so much, Doc. There's a link to give a donation. What's this? So much, Doctor. Is there a link to... I donate money to Judicial Watch, because he's one of the few organizations that's going after the jugular of these criminals in Washington. And if we don't get this government straightened out, everything else is going to be a moot point. So that's who I donate money to recently, because again, this whole governmental system is so corrupt and so deep that we gotta keep at these sociopaths. But I don't need any donations. World Organization for Natural Medicine is an organization I'm on the board. They do work in third world countries. They're Clinics for Humanity, if you want to donate to them. But we gotta get this political system straightened out. Before anything else can get squared away. So That's my recommendation. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedules. I hope you enjoyed it. Can you do muscle testing to a client far away? Absolutely. What you can do is write the name of the person that you want to test, and then use a surrogate. First, test the surrogate to make sure that they do not have any structural imbalances or organ imbalances. And then you take the piece of paper with the person's name on it and put it in their pocket. When you test that person, you will be getting the answers to them. It's called quantum entanglement. We're all connected in the whole universe. And it, I do it with my clients' pets. They don't bring the pet in. They just write the name of the pet. I first test them. Nothing shows up. Put the paper in their pocket. And then whatever you find, it relates specifically to the pet. It's very accurate. Go for it. Okay. So, I mean, I could test one of my employees with your name in their pocket and get the results. Or you could send a digital photograph of yourself. And I literally, it's like called radionics. I can test off the photograph and get the answers that way. So it works. Great. Thank you so much. I had fun sharing this information. I hope you got a lot of good information, but parasites are a key issue, and apoxias both are very critical in degenerative diseases and cancer. So God bless. Next week, we have a really exciting thing about vegetarianism versus eating meat. I dug up a lot of really good information, and same time next week. Have fun this every day as if it was your first day on this planet, and enjoy every minute. God bless.